call the meeting to order. I have good news and I have bad news. Which do you want first?
Chair, first
is we don't have a quorum.
We don't?
And that was pretty much about it.
We didn't know until 8:10 this morning.
I'm not sorry about that. The good news is the meeting will be short. and informational only. So, does anyone want to take a break and sing or dance forever? We can't. Is there anything under new business that we can discuss for information only?
If anybody I didn't have any new business, so it's only if anybody has anything to bring forward.
Anything from the old business?
I can give you some updates.
All right, sure.
Would you like that?
Yep.
Okay, so first is, you've all probably heard, Doug Scheidt, our provost, will be leaving the college at the end of the semester, okay, to become the provost at Erie Community College. And this will give Doug the chance to rejoin his family in Buffalo. And so I'd like to thank Doug, right, for everything he's done to support our college. And he's done quite a bit. He's had a lot of accomplishments while he's here, right, including in the areas of increasing retention and graduation rates, new program development, support for online education, outcomes assessment, promotion of enhanced scholarship, and being a really good friend and colleague. And so he'll be very much missed. So thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
And in the interim period, the responsibilities of the provost are going to be divided between Molly Mott, who is our associate provost, and Ken Erickson, our dean of the School of Science, Health, and Criminal Justice. And the way that they're going to do this is they're both going to continue to carry out their current responsibilities, okay, but they're going to work cooperatively with Molly focusing on issues of growth and student success and retention and our relationship with SUNY, and Ken focusing on faculty issues, right, and leadership within the academic community on campus. And so both are going to report directly to me. And we've already identified the names for the search committee, and I'll be probably announcing them later today or tomorrow. And, you know, the ad, I think, is already up in higheredjobs.com, and it'll be in the Chronicle and all that jazz. And so both of them have sworn to kill me if we don't successfully complete the search by the end of the spring semester. Okay, so we're going to successfully do that. Okay, and so for those who don't know, the Chancellor, Christina Johnson, visited our campus last Tuesday, and the visit went very well. You could have seen, if you've read the latest blab, you've seen some pictures of it. Okay, and so she started down at Neville Dine, where she was immediately impressed by our electric vehicle charging station, right, which she likes because she's an environmental engineer, for those who don't know. And so we then took her to see our environmental engineering lab, naturally. Okay, and then we went from there to the esports arena, where she cut the ribbon, okay, and there was press there and so forth. And one of the more interesting things that happened, and I figure that I'll just tell you guys about it, all of the, you know, campus folks know this already, is that, so she was there, and she likes to engage with students. And so she was talking to the students about this and that. And then she asked, you know, those of you who are, you know, on the esports teams, how does this impact your education, your, you know, regular learning? Okay, and one of the students promptly said, well, I'm on the Overwatch team. And in Overwatch, in order to be successful, you've got to do a lot of statistical analysis of what's going on. He says, I'm actually taking a course in statistics for my major, and being on this team allows me to apply it, right, to something I really love. And I was standing there, and my jaw just dropped, and what a great answer this was, right? And then another student was talking about how, you know, he used to get nervous, okay, before taking exams. And now being on a team and doing the teamwork and the nervousness that comes before a match, and our team is undefeated, by the way, helps him deal with his nervousness, and now he's much calmer taking exams, right? And so so we had just a number of students giving wonderful answers, right, which we couldn't have paid for such good answers.
No, we couldn't have planned better students.
Yeah, no, it was great. And so the chancellor was very impressed by that. So then we walked up. She saw the steel bridge. We went to the library, okay, where she met with our students and saw our wonderful library facility. And then to the student center, where she met with faculty and staff. And so she, these were all things she wanted to do while she was here. And then finally, we came into Cook Hall. She saw the early childhood program, right, and saw a visiting group of Chinese faculty, and then came upstairs to meet with the senior staff. And so we gave her, she got a couple of nice parting gifts, right? At the esports arena, she got a jersey with her name on it, so she thought that was very cool. Okay, and then just so she'd have the full set, when she came and met with the senior staff, she got a lab coat, right, with her name and Rudy embroidered on it, and a set of SUNY Canton lab glasses, as well as a bag of North Country goodies for the road. So she left us, and, you know, she as she left, she told me she was very impressed, okay, with what she saw on the campus and what we've accomplished, and with our students. And one of the things she talked about in the article that appeared in the Watertown Daily Times was about the diversity on our campus, which I think was much more than she was expecting to see, you know, way up here in the North Country. And so I think we had a very good visit, okay, and I'd like to thank, you know, a lot of people across the campus, because these things don't just happen. It required, you know, basically the work of hundreds of people, right, ranging from, you know, the folks who met with her to the folks who helped clean up the college and make sure we put our best foot forward. So there were a lot of people in buildings and grounds, for example, who, you know, put an extra time even polishing my desk, right, so that the chancellor would think I was a neat guy. And somebody I'd like to point out is right across from me, and that's Michaela, okay, because if you've never dealt with a chancellor's visit, something that you quickly learn is that things change every 5 minutes. Okay, and so you have to constantly be rearranging things and, you know, dealing with those kinds of issues. And, of course, Michaela did that with her usual aplomb. And so thank you very much, Michaela. Something that's kind of big that you may have seen in the news is that we've taken over the operation of the Small Business Development Center, okay, in Plattsburgh, okay, which was formerly under SUNY Plattsburgh. Okay, the center is now moved from where it was to Clinton Community College, which is providing them with space at no cost, and it's operated by us. And so we are now the only SUNY that operates two small business development centers, okay, and we cover basically the North Country between the two of them. The one in Plattsburgh is the oldest one in the state, I'm told. Okay, and so we're now doing it. And so,
so why are we doing it? Oh, I mean, they had a long history. Jim King, who ran the Small Business Development Center statewide, started the one in Plattsburgh and went from Plattsburgh to Albany. So, given that legacy,
well, it was going to close because Plattsburgh pulled out because they, you know, basically are in a financial struggle right now.
Okay.
Okay, and the way these things are set up.
King retired
a long time ago. Yeah, but I remember working with him 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Well, in fact, they talked about us as being kind of the savior of the place. I mean, Betty Little, who's the senator for that area, was just so appreciative that SUNY Canton had stepped in and that Clinton Community College had stepped in. And it's a good partnership because Clinton is also very heavily involved in technology. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we want every student from Clinton coming to SUNY Canton. Okay, and so doing this will be good for us. Plus, it extends, you know, our economic development reach, which is good. And, you know, because part of what we want the state to see is that SUNY Canton is indispensable to economic development in the northern part of the state.
What does that cost us?
Nothing. As it turns out, no. The way
power, nothing?
No. The way that SBDCs work, okay, is that the campus contribution, okay, is for the director of the center, but of course we already have a director of our center, which we were already paying for. Okay, and so there they'll only have an assistant director or associate director, I forget which, okay, they call it. And so the SBDC pays for that. Okay, so they pay for all of their staff. We pay for, internet and stuff like that. Okay, so it's a fairly small cost to us.
And I think, if I could just...
Sure.
SUNY Plattsburgh is having some financial trouble. So to support a director that probably makes $75,000 or $85,000 was a position cut for them.
Right.
I believe that's... I think it was a financial decision more than anything.
It was.
So again, it's a cost-benefit. You know, what's on the campus? Is that position, you know... How do we take care of that?
So our director didn't have a problem?
No, he's in fact in favor of it.
Is he traveling over, or is he doing
He goes over
remotely?
There periodically, though mostly by remote. It's very easy to do these days.
And right? His assistant has also picked up all of the administrative side, so all the mm-hmm. purchase orders, all the money will be handled here by he and Linda Lafar.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, so it made sense on a lot of different directions, and the folks in that part of the state are ultra thankful, okay, for us. And if that gets us a little more political support, that's a good thing, too.
Is that what does it do for us?
Well, a large part of what we're trying to do, okay, is help develop new businesses and economic development in the North
the
Country.
Overall, what does it
overall.
Do for Canada?
For the village of Canton?
No, I mean for SUNY Canton.
Oh, again, it extends our reach in terms of economic development. We become a bigger player, okay, in that with, I think, more attention to what we're doing. And also, like I said before, it will give us some more political support in the area. And a lot of our students do come from that part of the state, too. Okay, and so working in those areas is important. It also might give us some access to companies that we normally wouldn't deal with, right, and might make them a little bit more familiar with this part of the North Country, because the Plattsburgh area has undergone some, fairly good growth lately after the Air Force Base went under. And so you see a lot of advanced manufacturing there, and I'd like to see more of it coming to this direction, too. So I think there are a lot of opportunities.
I think partnership with Clinton Community College has some particular opportunities, though. They run the, it's a training program for advanced manufacturing.
Right. With a nice new facility,
with
too.
With a nice new facility, but I'm not sure they've got as much clout as the nice new facility would have outsiders believing they do. And I think if we can provide more of the content and substance to what they're training over there, I think that's mm-hmm. where we'll see some marriages, both on the corporate side mm-hmm. as well as on the student
I think
transfer
so too.
Side.
I think so,
that's
too.
That's a great opportunity.
And when I was over there, I spoke to their president, whose name is Di Pasquale, and he was very eager to send a visiting team over to SUNY Canton, which we'll schedule soon. Right, to look at ways that we can work together. And I told them I didn't really want it to be program by program, but rather institution to institution, which I think would be much better. And the person also in his office, when I happened to go by to say hi, was the head of their faculty, who told me he was very interested in seeing these kinds of partnerships with SUNY Canton, because their traditional partner, SUNY Plattsburgh, hasn't been a very good partner. Okay, and I think it's the usual, kind of looking down at the community colleges and colleges of technology thing that you sometimes see in the comprehensives, and we don't have that kind of attitude. And so I think they're eager to work with us, and that'll be a good thing for their students. It'll be a good thing for us. It'll be a good thing for business. It'll be a good thing for the economy.
Does Clinton offer bachelor degrees, or are they
no.
s- So there's still all of the certificate and associates.
Associates, yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah, so it feeds into us.
Feeds us perfectly, yeah. Yes.
And so, anyway, so that's really good. So, like I said, we'll be working on a schedule to have them come by and visit us soon. We're also working on some other partnerships, and so a partnership with SUNY Maritime and with North Country Community College, as well as on some new degree programs, many online. Doug, would you like to talk about those things?
Sure. One of the important aspects for growth, given that people aren't moving into our county, our residence halls are largely full in the fall. So growth in enrollment most likely is it's mostly going to be online. In fact, there's a lot of competition for 18-year-olds, which is a declining population. Who's not declining and not really saturated as a market are post-traditional adult students often working. So online is an opportunity. And so our faculty has really... Unlike my experience at other campuses where there's a lot of sluggishness at best, resistance at worst, to innovation and taking on new ideas and making them happen, our faculty is really engaged in the online. So this year alone, we have 7 programs that are being either developed new or expanded into online in the pipeline. Those include Sustainable Construction Management, which is a new program. These are all bachelor's degrees. Accounting, and there's only one other online accounting bachelor's degree in the SUNY system, so we would be number 2. Esports management, which we've gotten a lot of traction, and one of the things we're really interested in there is it may be an off-ramp for students who come thinking they want to do game design, but then realize that it's not playing games all for 4 years, and there's a lot of coding involved. But they might, attrition in those programs tends to be high, but we want them to attrit to a different major, not trip from college. So having programs that are related but perhaps are not as coding heavy. We're adapting our industrial technology management for online with a 4-course logistics track, I think supply chain management, electrical engineering technology online. That's at the request of Global Foundries, who has Hudson Valley doing an associate's degree on their campus and Clarkson doing a master's degree on their campus, and they needed a bridge for those students. And so our faculty responded by working on the EET program for the latter 2 years online, since most of the lab components are in the first 2 years. Applied psychology, and this is actually at the request of SUNY, because there is not a single psychology degree in Open SUNY. Not one. Not a single bachelor's degree in psychology. And psychology is typically one of the 4 biggest bachelor's degrees on any college campus. Typically you have English, business, criminal justice, and psychology making up more than half of the enrollments at any campus. So there's tremendous opportunity there. Forensic criminology is under development. So 7 new programs in addition to the 4 that were worked on last year and so forth. So real opportunities for growth and serving post-traditional students using online technology. In addition to that, we had a meeting with the maritime faculty who were up working with Addie Jenny with regard to kind of a project looking at our waterfront and opportunities there. And Joe Hoffman, of Joe Hoffman fame, emailed him to summarize the opportunities that we talked about. One is really to develop an associate's degree in small vessel technology. Call it marine technology, small vessel operations, which would provide within it the 100-ton and less pilot's license, which they think is doable. Theirs is a larger license that takes more than 2 years. In addition to look at that ITM logistics with a focus on transportation. In addition, looking for opportunities combined with economic development and the agribusiness program, because they see this idea of transportation management and the seaway relating to the agricultural industry in the area, as well as they have a clean energy, or they're applying for a clean energy grant with regard to wind, and they're interested in partnering with our sustainable energy engineering management faculty on that. So the opportunity to work with a campus that is very unique, Maritime really doesn't have competition in these areas, but at the other end of the state, literally kitty corner, and partner in ways that are no one else is doing these things. And that there's real opportunities in there. There was a third area besides online.
North Country.
North Country.
We're working with North Country.
Oh, North Country Community. I like North Country Economic Development. North Country Community College. I had some real interesting ideas about how we could partner to in a win-win-win situation, including the students, to put their two-year degrees together with our two-year degrees to create something that doesn't exist currently. My favorite example is we have graphic and multimedia design, which really is very technology and graphic design heavy. We do not have studio art. So a student who really is more of the artist and might want to pick up the employable nature of graphic design is going to come here and find that we don't have a painting studio. The only art classes we have, I believe, are digital photography and drawing. So they have an associate's degree in studio art. So the idea of creating a 2+2, where a student could do their first 2 years in studio art and then come here and do graphic and multimedia design, would be a win-win in something that does not exist right now. And it would allow us to add a different flavor to our existing program and for them to recruit students who wouldn't normally be thinking about North Country. And so we're looking at the various pairings of programs for that idea of creating something that doesn't exist that would be attractive to students who otherwise wouldn't find either of us, perhaps, or it wouldn't be a good match. So, and that's really a great opportunity.
And Doug and Lenore have been working on the Maritime piece, and Doug and me and several other people have been working on the North Country piece.
When we were speaking with the Maritime folks when they came up, just kind of as an aside, we mentioned in passing, you know, oh, well, our cybersecurity degree, you have a 4-year cybersecurity degree? Yeah, we do. Wow! Like, they said that a couple of different times about a couple of different degree programs. Like, the game design was another one. They were like, wow! Like, just very, very clearly very impressed with the innovative kind of programs that we have, and that pushed them to want to work with us further. When I got an email from Dr. Hoffman a couple days later, it was like, here, the following initiatives are things we would like to partner with you on, including but not limited to, and there were like six things on the list. So I think that shows that we're a partner in demand by another institution that is doing great things and doing innovative.
Yes, it's really interesting to be partnering with a special institution like Maritime, where, again, no one else does what they do. So to kind of connect with them is a real opportunity.
And so, these
and
are
I should also apologize for my tardiness. My son is fine. He doesn't need stitches. But that was our concern. So.
Okay. Well, we're glad he's fine. Our enrollments this fall increased nicely. This and the tuition increase put us in a stronger budgetary position. So, Sean, would you like to talk about our fiscal picture and give an update on construction on the campus?
So, as we talk about dollars, and you know, that's all I care about, we did exceed our fall revenue from last year by almost $790,000. So, you know, as I break that apart and try to figure out where the dollars came from, some of them, $400,000, you know, give or take, have to do with the tuition increases. Some of it has to do with increased enrollment. There was a small amount, around 40 students. And some of it is increased additional credits, so they're taking more part-time courses. So to me, that's great. That means we could very possibly hit $21 million for our revenue, which we've never done before. So I'm really pleased with that. Of course, it's never going to be enough. We're working and trying to manage the UUP raises. You know, it's not as clean as it would appear. You know, there was a $600 lump, so we had a certain date where they ran the list, and you had to be certain criteria, you had to be on the payroll a certain date, you had to do this, you had to do that. in order to get the 600. So people have gotten their 600. And so then it becomes the 1% discretionary, but it can't be across the board. So then we have to figure that out, and then that's going to hit. And then we have the 16, 17 raises, and we'll have to calculate all of those, and they'll be split in half, and they'll get half of those. Then they'll get the additional 1% on the raise amount. It's ridiculous. Then we'll have to do the 2018. So we're working.
You all have that straight?
Yeah. So we're working through all of those pieces. SUNY's very helpful, but there's a lot that goes with it and a lot of markers that, you know, when we run our payroll list to be sure who's on the payroll, when they're on the payroll, if they hit those markers to get that particular raise and some of those things. But I think people are already happy that they've gotten a little bit of something.
Yep.
It's been a couple years, so I know the president has had people reach out to him already, just with the $600 lump sum. So
it must have gone very well because I've had no phone calls saying, none. Where's my money?
So again, 1.8 million on the top of our payroll, we're okay for now. You know, in the long term, what's it going to mean for us? I don't really know. You know, hopefully we can, we're hoping that we can build our enrollment enough to help cover that for the future. Because it's 1.8 million this year because of the retros. Now the 16, 17 raises, they only get half, and then next year they get the other half. So this year the increase on our payroll is 1.8 million. Next year it'll be 1.1 million. And then the following year, it's up to about 650,000. So it's more manageable if we can sustain. So that's kind of where we are with some of that.
And a lot of that is cumulative, mind you. So it's not just
right.
relative to this year. It's relative
Correct.
To the previous year.
Correct.
So it keeps going up.
Yeah. So, we're okay for now. But, we need to keep going forward. If we go backward at all, it's not going to be that good. Just for information, we currently have 213 Excelsior students. What that means in tuition assistance for them is $464,000. So that number, again, is increasing. So last year we had 150. This year some of those have dropped off, and we have new students started in the fall. So 213. And I was going to run the percentage on that, of what it is of our student body, but it's pretty small.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that.
It's in the neighborhood of 10% or less, isn't it?
No, not even 10%.
Yeah.
8%.
Okay, so or less. Yeah.
Okay. Much less.
Okay.
So when you see all the hype about Excelsior students and everybody goes for free, it's not so much. And I didn't think about asking Carrie until later this morning that I wondered how many were full Excelsior, because many of these are just a portion, right?
Yep.
They're $100, or they're $50, or they're $200. They're not. It's not like they got their full tuition paid by Excelsior. It's last dollar in, so it's not exactly what it's you read about in the paper.
There's an interesting problem with that, though, and that's that a student who even only gets $50 or $100 from Excelsior gets something far more valuable, which is their tuition is frozen.
Right.
Even if they only get $50 or $100 from Excelsior as the last dollar in, the other thing that Excelsior does is far more valuable to the student, which is that it freezes their tuition.
At 16, 17 rates.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And so that would save them $200 right there
each
year. Okay, assuming that the $200 increases continue. And that's a problem for the colleges, obviously,
right.
because that's revenue we're not getting.
Yeah, didn't say at the end of the first year we wouldn't get paid for those students till the end of the year from the state.
Right, we have
Does
to.
That happen?
So we have to recertify each one of the students each semester to see if they're meeting their targets, and then when they're not, then if they can't be certified, then we don't get paid for them. Then we have to chase them for the money.
Yeah.
So it's going to create a cluster for sure.
Yep, and we raised every one of these issues multiple times in multiple venues.
Yep.
Okay, Sean did, I did. We made real pests of ourselves, right, as this was being implemented. And there are various pieces of this that look like they may improve. So, they're looking to move towards a cohort tuition freeze model, as opposed to, you know, the everybody in model that they had, which essentially gives everybody their own individual tuition, okay, which was insane. Okay, and so that'll be a little better, and you know, and hopefully the state will continue to fund it and not leave us holding the bag.
Right. I can see where we will probably take some losses over it.
Yeah, sure.
And just to kind of talk about one of the initiatives that many people worked on was the Mount Ida students.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a campus that closed in Massachusetts, and we went out and recruited for their students, right? Because everybody knows an out-of-state student, the tuition rate is $16,320. And so normally our regular tuition is $6,870. So that's $10,000. They're not TAP eligible, so they're not TAP GAP eligible, and they're not Excelsior eligible. So these students, you know, are much more valuable to us because we don't have. So what we did was we scholarship them $2,500 a year, because that brought their tuition down to the same as their in-state Massachusetts tuition. So we currently have seven students, I think maybe all in the Mort Sci.
Yeah.
When I looked at their majors today, it was Mort Sci and Vet Sci.
I have a couple of Vet Tech.
Are there Vet
Tech
too?
Yeah.
So seven. So that brought in an additional $114,000. Our investment was $17,500. So, you know, $96,000. By recruiting those seven students from out of state, and there's no TAP gap or no, you know, other investment for that. If they live on campus, which again, you know, then there becomes even more money. So you have the Cheney money, and you have the dorm money. So it's a win-win.
The two that I have are really great students.
Oh, the GPAs were all very high. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I pulled the list this morning. Yep. Yeah, they're all over three.
Yeah, this reminds me of my old. Days working at private colleges, okay, because, you know, the tuition begins to approach what it would be at a private college, and there you can do all kinds of interesting things to just gain one or two students and have it really pay off, whereas with, you know, the very low in-state New York rates, those things
right.
don't work.
So these students basically pay double tuition from our New York State students, and we don't have to pay TAP or TAP gap or anything on them. So again, initiatives, you know, somebody hears about something that's happening and we go out there and, you know, people invest their time and try to get those students on our campus. So I think it was a great initiative. That's just an example of one of the things that we do. As far as construction on the campus, I think some of you walked, right, the last time. Right now, our target for Cheney completion is December 21st. So I know there was a rumor this weekend, a student emailed the president and said we were lying to them that they heard it had been pushed back, but to my knowledge, not. So if anybody asks you about that, they had the inside. It's like the prison system, right? Where they all get the inside information. I don't know.
The president always tells the truth when he can, right?
Well, you know, the funny part about this is, so, you know, I immediately forwarded it to Sean and asked her, is there something I don't know here? Right? And she said no. And as it turns out, just by a funny coincidence, when I came onto campus the next morning, right, who did I see but Sue walking by. So I said, Sue, I said, are you aware of anything? And she says, no, everything's right on time, right? So I have no idea where that rumor got started.
So Dana Hall, we're working on the final designs for the interior of the building. So we're excited about that. We're bringing in the departments again to make sure that we have the spaces exactly the way they want them, and working with the architects on that. So that'll be the next. And then we have a multitude of little projects that are across the campus. So we will be doing the lobby of French Hall, the ceilings, and getting the floor straightened out and the desk and stuff, just to freshen that up. For my feeling is French Hall is always the first building that people see when they come on campus, and it needs to be our gateway building until, you know, something different happens and we have a brand new, big new building at the Y. But so, yeah, things are going along. We're working on our facilities master plan 5-year update. So if anybody's interested in looking at some of the information from that. We can make that available to them. I'm sure Mike has it online.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working with architects. Interesting, Scott Page, running the statistics on our classroom space, how it's used, what kind of classes, the numbers of students in there. He put on a presentation for us, and I said, oh my gosh, I think you know more about us than we know right now. It was very interesting and I think helpful to have academics included in those discussions, because they don't always understand. I always say that, you know, we've spent a lot of money doing the infrastructure and the gas lines and metering on the buildings and new light poles with LED lights and all those things that aren't really very sexy, but they really are setting us up for the next 50 years. So it's a critical piece of our infrastructure we're trying to secure for the future. But,
mm-hmm.
So,
thank you, Sean. And yeah, I mean, the guy that we're working with is very interesting. He's, you know, he certainly has a love of industrial engineering,
mm-hmm.
right? So he and I are swapping books and so forth on logistics and having a good time in discussions. He seems like a really with it sort of person.
He is.
Yeah.
Sean, are resident students, do we have room for more resident students?
Do we have room for more? We always make room for more, but do we have any empty rooms? We clearly do not.
And that's going to be a challenge. I mean, if we continue to grow, right, and I think we had a net increase of almost 100 students this year. If we continue to grow and, in fact, accelerate, okay, from that, then that will be a problem at some point, okay? But I don't want to move towards new construction, okay, until we know that that growth is going to be solid and continuous. And so I think it's a little premature to do it
right
now.
I mean, the problem is the dorms are self-supporting, so any of the construction that's done on the dorm is borrowed money. So you have to keep them filled at a certain capacity in order to make your debt payments. And so right now our debt service is a little bit high, $1.6 million a year. So if we were to build a new dorm and all the students were to transfer over to the new dorm, then we wouldn't be able to hit our debt service. And because they're self-supporting, again, it's not part of our core instructional budget, it's not part of our tuition or state support, they support themselves. So we need to be able to hit that debt service in order to, you know, it's a fine line between how many triples do you put in paying your bills.
As I said, we're in a comfortable place right now.
Right.
Putting new construction would be difficult to fill another building at this point. And that, you know, we have a first fill covenant with Kennedy Hall at this point. So we have to fill that building before we fill anything else. So a lot of times we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. We have to fill Kennedy, which takes away from Dipper from the revenue we have for traditional halls.
Right.
So
what would be our option if you say we had 50 new resident students next year? Where would you house them?
We'd probably triple them, or I mean, we don't want to go downtown or do any of those
things.
So
we also de-doubled, which is not even a real word in the dictionary. We took away double rooms in Kennedy Hall. So Kennedy, when it was built, was intended to be entirely single bedrooms across the facility. Through the way that the building was budgeted, we determined we needed to for a period of time, double some rooms. And so we've done that since the building opened in 2011 until this year. So we have the opportunity to bring back those doubles as well. And I think that was in the neighborhood of 20-ish students, give or take. In the past, RAs have had roommates. RAs have been single rooms. We've tripled second floor rooms. We've been creative with our space usage in the past, so we would do that again. It's not the ideal situation, but there's still not enough need to build another facility.
When you double or triple, is the amount of money the student paid decrease?
So they get a refund at certain points in the semester if they're still in a triple room. We've done it both ways. We've done a triple room rate and a double room rate, and we've done a standard rate with refunds to folks who are in triples, and the latter has worked out better for us, so that's what we do at this point. We're usually able to be triple as we move into the spring semester pretty successfully. They are still a marketable thing. I know,
right.
You know, people, I think, from the outside often think triples is a bad thing, but for students who are here, who are from economically challenged families, sometimes find that to be a real opportunity for them to spend less on housing, and you know, they're not in their rooms as much as
they're everywhere else on the campus.
I know a few years ago we looked at whether or not Victor Kennedy we should build again, and we just put it on hold.
Yeah, I mean, right. we had the plan, we kind of knew where it was going to go, yeah. We had a discussion. I'm on the CA board, we had a presentation, you know, Dave Rella came and presented at the CA board, and that was about the time where I think enrollment started moving in the direction we're in now, where it's a little more stable and not as in flux, I guess. So we decided at that point there was no way to fill another 300-bed facility. That's what we're talking about. And that had a dining hall and an office.
The other trend that helps us with this is a rising percentage of our students are online. Right now, some of them live on campus, but some don't. And so that helps as well us to grow without needing additional housing space. So it's all a fairly complicated equation.
Like for this semester, we have 4 students who went to campus who are fully online. We have a lot of students who take online classes, but there's fully online students who are fully
online. So
spring semester will be the only, last 3 springs, we've closed down one wing of one dorm for renovations, but we won't be doing that this year, so that'll give a little more space to.
Okay. Any questions for Anne? All right. Anne. Sean. I'm about to turn to Anne. Okay. So our advancement office has been moving to fill a couple of open positions and also had a number of recent successful alumni events. So Anne, would you like to talk a little bit about that?
So if you stop by the foundation office, you'll see some new faces, and over the next month or so, some more new faces. As you probably know, Keith Rosser left for a very appealing job at Clarkson. And so we promoted Stephanie Fay into his job and then searched for other positions in that office. So we have welcomed Sarah Hartman as gift steward. She does basically the bookkeeping. And she's been a fantastic addition, learning fast, wonderful part of the office, and she's helped out at a number of the alumni events already, and she is an alumna herself, so that gives her an extra connection to people. We have hired Sarah Manili to be a fundraiser, a gift officer. She starts in the beginning of December and is coming to us from SUNY Potsdam.
What was her name?
Sarah Manili. Manili. And that's taking over the position that Amanda Stopa held. She decided she didn't want to do fundraising anymore, done it for a few years. She's now the bookstore manager over at Clarkson. And we are still searching for the accounting assistant, scholarship administrator, and so hope to fill that position soon. Our first candidate dropped out just before she was supposed to start, so we went back to the search pool, and it remains to be seen how soon we'll be able to get someone in that one. But as I said, number of new faces, good enthusiasm in the office, and it's always good to bring in some new ideas and new people. Now, our fundraising year has been going well. As Dee said, we've had a lot of events. That always helps us connect with people. And I know I mentioned some of these gifts at the last meeting where I talked about the importance of bequests, because our biggest gift this year is a bequest. That is a gift that Peggy Lovato has worked on for years with Bobby Burnham, class of 46. And she was a foundation board member, very involved as an alumna. So she pretty much left her entire estate to the college, and it's totaling about $1.3 million, which is all going into scholarship endowment. So that's going to be a nice boost in that area. Also, Ike Cook, who was a foundation board member, left us and died an untimely death in September. He left us $50,000. And those gifts are, as I said, you know, bequests are always a tremendous boost for us. We've been having some good success working with deans, in particular Mike Newtown. We really started working closely with him last year, and Joffrey Vanderwood has done a number of trips with him, cultivating alumni and also some businesses that where they're not alumni working there, but they are wanting to be good partners. So we've just actually received a gift commitment for a new scholarship from an HVAC company down on Long Island that came up to our recruiting fair, and they are contemplating additional things that we've asked them to support, which includes funds to support internship, career development opportunities for students in HVAC and other engineering fields. But basically, what they keep hearing out in these visits is there are all these employers who are, they don't just want students from one program in engineering. They will hire everybody. They need IT people, they need civil engineering people, they need electrical. So it's from there to the Public Works Department in Las Vegas, where we have an alumnus who works there, to the local HVAC companies who are desperate in paving companies and all things like that. So we're really trying to build those partnerships, and so that we have these stronger connections with the businesses, because they see a very direct benefit to investing in our programs. Athletics has been very involved in fundraising again this year, as they were last year, particularly hockey coach Alex Boak. He puts a lot of effort in. He's pulled together reunions of hockey alumni, and so it was a few weeks ago we had the latest one, which focused on graduates from the 80s. Those have been super, and it's definitely bringing some alumni who haven't made gifts before to make gifts in support of hockey, and some alumni to make larger gifts. So we're seeing with this kind of outreach a lot of, you know, our good momentum in our giving, and continuing our reach to get new donors, people who've never been donors. Dr. Zafran's challenge is up again this year, where last year he challenged to match dollar for dollar any new donor to the Canton Fund, any alumni donor to the Canton Fund. And we did increase substantially our number of alumni donors, and we hope to continue that trend this year and get more, as well as keep those people who were new donors last year. Touching on events, and again, I mentioned this at the last meeting, but I'll just bring it up again, because we talked about how many students are in online programs. As we, as an alumni office, think to the future, what is this going to mean when, you know, 40% of our students are doing online degrees? We need those students, when they graduate, to feel connected to this college and connected as alumni. So we've joined in with the grant that is building a sense of community among online students, because we want to have them aware of the alumni office, so that 5 years from now we can hold an alumni event somewhere and those online graduates will come too. We want them to become donors. They need to feel that connection for that to happen. So we did an event in New York City a few weeks ago, which we did jointly with admissions and academics, where we brought a faculty member. We had panelists who were alumni talking about careers. We had some prospective students, some current online students, and graduates there. And we have a similar event planned for Syracuse on November 27th, which we're reaching out to people now. Will be the same format with a panel, and we're working with admissions and academics, and we'll have a larger group of faculty going down to that one. What really seems to work in terms of reaching the online students and recent online graduates is having their faculty member reach out directly to them, asking them to come to the event. And again, so we're just using all the tools at our disposal to encourage people to be involved as alumni. And I want to mention, and again in the collaboration mode, that our office has continued for the last year and a half working on improvements to the scholarship awarding process. And that's a project that we've been doing with financial aid and admissions, and the last 6 months we've really brought in IT, because there's a lot of technical sides to it. it used to be that each office did their own thing, and it was kind of on paper with spreadsheets. So we've all been working together, not just to make it run more smoothly and be less duplicative in the work, but so that we can award scholarships strategically. Admissions is very focused on this. They see what other colleges are doing. And I would like to believe that, you know, many of the things admissions is doing in communicating with students and getting scholarship awards to them earlier has been a factor in our good enrollment numbers, because that's definitely a piece that we see. Students get early and good offers from other colleges. So we're trying to take all of the resources that we have available, the foundation scholarships, our campus scholarships, and the financial aid, federal and state, that's available to students, and be looking at it in a comprehensive way and awarding the scholarships earlier and communicating with students readily and giving those scholarships to the students we most want to come to SUNY Canton. So that's moving right along, and in fact, our group, we met yesterday and training a whole bunch of new scholarship reviewers today, and then we'll start awarding scholarships in a couple of weeks, which is months earlier than it was done in the past. So it's a pretty tremendous change that I think will be very beneficial.
Any questions for Ann?
Yeah, I have a question. I get all the emails from the college. I don't know if all the council members I get a lot that I don't need to know, like who's being excused for the future. But the New York City trip, it sounds to me like that must have been a really expensive trip. And I wonder, do you have a lot of attendees?
We had a decent turnout with like 25 to 30 people present at the event. We had more signed up. We had 45 people signed up to attend, but we tend to have a big no-show rate. It was not that expensive. We found some good ways to do events in New York City. One of the most expensive things with an event in New York City is the location itself and the food and drink. And so we held it at the SUNY Welcome Center, which is right in central Manhattan. So it's easy to get to with public transportation, and it's free for us to use. So we got a great event space with two rooms that we were able to use for free. So there was that, and then we hired a caterer to bring in food, and you know that was $600, which is a great price for. And we've done, this is the third time we've done this event at this place. Then only this time we added admissions and the faculty. And we looked at hotels in New York, those of us who traveled down there, but it was one of those times when a lot was going on and they were really expensive, so we stayed outside the city and took the train in for the day. So it was a very economical event.
And on the employees, there tend to be a lot of employees in foundation leaving. Is there a reason for that?
I think it's just coincidence that we have those two at the same time. You know, as Keith has said, you know, he couldn't pass up the opportunity. Yeah, he couldn't pass up the opportunity for a job that didn't require him to move in. And it was a great promotion, not only a promotion, but there's room for advancement there, whereas with the foundation, he was at the top where he could be because he was not interested in being vice president. So
something else he mentioned was the free tuition, right, for his kids was a major consideration.
Yeah, that one, but there are other pretty obvious people that would not turn that down.
And then there was Amanda. So she was the other one who left recently. And
so you still have Jamie Burgess? Is she still?
Yeah.
Is there Joe Carbone?
No, he left 2 years ago.
Stephanie Fay?
Yeah, we promoted her.
Liz Irvine?
Yeah.
She gone down with that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Gravelin now.
Okay, great.
Carbona. She left 2 years ago.
Yeah, Carboni was one of our coaches. He's actually still one of our coaches.
He's still over.
In baseball.
Yeah, and it was just a side opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was never full time.
Yeah.
Yeah, his interest has always been, of course, in athletics, in baseball, and he wanted to increase his time there. And we weren't able to do that initially, right? And then he was able to.
How many of the online students were able to meet with a professor that came down
in New York?
Yeah.
She ended up having 4 show up. One of them actually traveled from Poughkeepsie. She was so interested in that opportunity.
Yeah, I think something that's important for us in the future is to establish a stronger presence in New York City, right? We've got an admission recruiter down there, and we currently get, 35%, some number like that, of our students come from Metro New York City. And so it's important for us to be there in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I should add, so the basketball team is playing at the Barclay Center on December 14th, which is in Brooklyn, and while we like the Manhattan location for the free space, it's not necessarily the best place for all our students, or not students, but our graduates, who don't, the majority of our graduates down there do not work in Manhattan. So it's not always the closest spot for them. So we're holding an alumni event in this connection with that game, and we expect that. We'll also invite online students to that one as well, and we expect that being a social event, a sporting event, and the location to draw a good group and some different people than we saw last month.
There and Lenora, I forgot, I should have mentioned, we don't have a quorum, so it's all
information.
But maybe you figure that out by now.
Okay. Well, Karen's not here, so I'm going to skip the faculty governance piece, though things seem to be going very smoothly with faculty governance. Barrett, could you tell us what's new among the SUNY faculty side?
Sure. Actually, I do have an update for governance as well. Karen will be ending her term at the end of this semester, so we'll be looking for our new presiding officer. So that would be one update. From the Senate side, as you can probably guess, we've had some concerns with the request for information and how Senate the Faculty Senate was largely bypassed, I think, in discussions of that nature. So we do have a strong group of faculty who are want to challenge some of the things that are going on with the RFI. Why was our voice not included immediately and that sort of thing? I'm just assuming you guys know what the RFI is before I know.
You may want to explain.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So the provost for the SUNY system sent out a request for information to vendors who provide online education, different platforms, people like Pearson, I think, was one of them, or people who provide for Southern New Hampshire, just requests for information. What do you think you could do to make SUNY a leader in online education again? 26 vendors responded. They are considering proposals, and I believe that our provost also sits on that committee and has been a very strong advocate for us. However, because University Faculty Senate didn't hear about this until after the fact, well, I think maybe Gwen, our president, was included in, but as I understand it, very little to do with those discussions. So we have questions, for example, from the comprehensive colleges, how will focusing on online impact our bricks and mortar spaces? For places like us who have significant resources wrapped up in online education, how will that impact our space? And they claim that centralization is not their goal, but they said none of the models are being taken off the table yet. And so my update in this regard is just that I've been a very strong advocate for our campus in terms of trying to allow us to continue to participate and, in fact, lead, because we've done so many things that I think have shown how you do this really well, and that's our opportunity to show that SUNY Canton can be a leader in that regard. Why don't you just get on behind us, and we'll show you. Invest in us, invest in the things that we've done already. The second thing that I wanted to talk about was the chancellor has an idea to increase our underrepresented minority faculty by 1,000 within 10 years. So across SUNY, she would like to increase, I think, 1,000 was her goal. And so she has a program called Prodigy, and I'm not 100% sure what PRODIGE stands for, but it would help to cover salaries for a couple of years, and I think we would ladder in the campus paying for minority faculty salaries. And I think my job, I feel, has been to remind her that the tech sector has some of the most diverse campuses and yet least diverse faculty. And so she really does need to consider investing in us and not just the university centers to make sure that our faculty also increase in diversity. And if she decides to go forward with her postdoctoral fellowship model, where we are going to try to get our best SUNY PhD graduates into academia by supporting postdoctoral positions where there's some teaching, our campus is actually a great opportunity for people to come. Even if it's just for 3 years, our minority faculty can have a 3-year postdoctoral fellowship in teaching and have that paid for by SUNY. So just always a reminder to getting her to think that, you know, those things would be a great fit for a place like ours. One more update is that SUNY is updating general education. There's a white paper that's out, and they don't necessarily think they're going to do anything radical with the changes to general education, but one that's coming will be to add a diversity and inclusion component. I've already talked to Courtney about how I think that that's a need on this campus too for graduation, but we don't have one. And so to get ahead of the curve, I think we should consider adding a graduation requirement to take a course in diversity and inclusion so that we show that our students leave here with cultural competency.
I'll just add that actually we're behind the curve because that's a requirement of Middle States. And it's been there for decades, but Middle States has not been enforcing it. Certain content of general education, and they are starting to enforce it on self-study visits and say, where's your cultural sensitivity component? And so the reason for calling for the white paper was to say we're having campuses getting questioned about how they don't have what's required, and so why not have the SUNY Gen Ed meet the needs of Middle States.
So I've actually brought that to academic standards as a possible discussion point. I did that yesterday, actually. I think this is something we should get on board with sooner than later, because we are out of compliance with Middle States in that regard. Other things, we have some resolutions that I'll be discussing this week. One of them is to make SUNY the first test optional system in the United States. That includes SATs and GERs, but does not include MCATs and LSATs, because those programs are saying that they think that they are important indicators. This would not mean we would take that ability away from students to complete those tests. Some students want the SATs because they do well on those and maybe their grades weren't as high. And certainly for things like NCAA Clearinghouse, the SATs may be required in some instances, but we want to be the first test optional system. And that resolution, I believe, is directed at the chancellor. So if we support that, it's our message. Canton is also in support of telling the chancellor, we would like you to give a directive to all campuses to remove that requirement. A gender-neutral language in all communication, which is relevant for our campus. This is not to say that we are not allowed to refer to people who identify as male and female as he or she. This is to say that in policy statements, we would no longer use statements like, he or she will be allowed to. It's instead, they will be allowed to. And although that may not have followed proper grammar in the past, this is actually becoming more of an accepted norm in writing, and so that will be something for PR to consider, removing he, she statements, and instead using they, a gender-neutral pronoun. And the other resolutions, creation of lactation space, which if I'm not, we do that already.
We've been one for
long time.
Eight years.
Yeah, and not all campuses do. And then creation of graduate fellowships, which doesn't apply to us.
And that's always a challenge with SUNY, because what's good for the system is not necessarily what's good for any individual campus. And so this one on online instruction was of concern to us in a number of different directions. I mean, Sean immediately saw this as a threat to our budget, right? I saw this as a threat to our growth. Doug saw this as a threat to where we've been investing our money, right? And so
we see it as a threat to my faculty too. Don't take away our ability to run our curriculum.
Exactly. And so the good news is that the chancellor asked me to put Doug on the committee, okay, which I of course was happy to do. And Doug has done a fabulous job in representing our interests and doing so in a way that isn't just responding to each individual company that's trying to sell the system something, but in an overarching way to talk about how we might do this that won't harm the campuses. And I've got to say that between the president's meeting that was held 6 weeks ago, something like that, And when the chancellor visited on campus and I had a chance to talk with her a little bit about this as well on a one-on-one, her thinking had definitely evolved, okay, in response to what's going on. So
fact,
I'm optimistic.
I apologize, but at 10:30 there's another conference call for that committee that I need to be on because I've been a little bit assertive about, you know, please help SUNY Canton and don't hurt SUNY Canton, and that will be good for the system. But and the topic is next steps, so I definitely want to have my voice in shaping those next steps, and I've had some success at shaping that in a way that I think will be beneficial for our campus.
I think it's very interesting how things go around and around. 23 years ago, there was, again, the review of Gen Ed, and then the diversity course was proposed as a requirement. And there was much dissension then about it, and it didn't happen then. And then Middle States did it a few years later. Now it's coming back.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we do offer a badge in cultural competency, and we've identified some 20-something courses available on campus as part of it that have a strong diversity content. So we don't have a requirement, but you know, we're sidling up to it, I guess would be a fair way to say it. And so, okay, thank you, Barrett. Any other questions for Barrett? All right. Travis, can you tell us what's new in PR? We've had lots of publicity.
Lots of big things. So probably the biggest thing is our mention in the Washington Post. And to my knowledge, we've never been in the Washington Post in the history of the college, maybe 50 years ago or so, I don't know. But for esports, so Ohio State was the main feature, but we got a mention towards the bottom, I think a quote from Randy Smitsky and also Molly Mott. So esports is the gift that keeps on giving for us here in the last year or so. We mentioned the Chancellor's visit. One of the big highlights of her visit was the eSports grand opening. We were able to have a small media event, so we had the Watertown Daily Times, and Channel 7 finally came up to cover the eSports arena. And as we said, the students couldn't have been better with their responses on why they appreciate eSports and moving forward competitively with opportunities they normally wouldn't have. For the Chancellor's visit, we designed an exclusive publication just for her, highlighting a few items that were on her State of the SUNY address. So those initiatives were entrepreneurship, individualized education, and sustainability. So it was a nice little piece that we were able to scramble and put together for her. Michaela, did we send that to the college council?
No, I didn't. Okay. I'm sorry. I can get them to
you. Yeah, we can send a PDF or a print copy if you're interested in checking it out. Along those lines, the gaming editor from Variety magazine was on campus on Saturday, Brian Crescente. His son is interested in, I assume, gaming design, but he checked out the esports arena, and so we've made contact with him, and hopefully that maybe will pay off down the road with a story or at least a few mentions. But just to have our name mentioned in one of his tweets was fantastic for us. We stacked up a few more front pages, so this is four as of this semester, so that's always pretty good. As we mentioned, the SBDC coverage that we received, we made the front page on the Press Republican in Plattsburgh. So you can tell by the fact that we made the front page that our acquisition is really a big deal in the Plattsburgh area. We also made the front page on the Augsburg Advance News. Not as big as the Press Republican, but this was for our Living Writer series. Anwar Ricky Ricard, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He was a soldier in the Ugandan army as a boy. And to give you a little backstory, Keeley Hutton, who was actually Danny Fay's niece, wrote a book called Soldier Boy. And she was the intro presenter for the Living Writer series that Phil and LaMarche puts on every year. So we were able to get her. She did her presentation. And then luckily we were able to get Ricky to visit the campus a few weeks later. And so his story and his presentation were featured on the front page of the Advance News in Augsburg. I'm not sure if I'm going to step on your soul score name about athletics, but...
No, sorry, keep going.
Okay.
Sorry. I
used to be struggling though. Okay. So our men's basketball team played against Division I Cornell, which is pretty rare. It's not very often that a Division I basketball school would play a D3 school. Occasionally it happens, but It was a long shot, probably to win, but kept it competitive in the first quarter, or first half, excuse me. We were up 4-0 at one point, so that's a big deal. Plus, we got our name on ESPN, and we had our little logo on ESPN and on the app, and it was live stream. So, you know, that's huge for us. I think Ben said it took him about 2 years to schedule that game. So, okay, that's huge. Also, another ESPN highlight, we were on the SportsCenter Top 10, number 2 plays. That would have been Friday, October 26th. Freshman Jeffrey Gall on the men's hockey team went under his legs, top shelf, which is over the goalie. And so they were able to, Nate was able to get that to ESPN somehow. Maybe it was coach.
Mm-hmm. And we won that game too against Wilkes College.
Game, yes. So number 2 Wilkes play University. Friday night, and then the number 5 play the entire week for ESPN Sports Center. So, you know, more huge exposure for athletics. We also had a couple visits from some bigger news outlets. WSYR Channel 9 came to cover esports. That story hasn't aired yet, but hopefully in the next week or so we'll see that on TV. And then the Associated Press came and did a video, spent all day with the funeral services program, so hopefully that will run in the next couple weeks as well. So I'll let you know if that happens. But yeah, lots of big news, lots of big outlets that normally don't come to campus are very interested in all the programs and pretty much everything we're doing. So.
Yeah, and something Travis didn't mention is a number of these newspaper things also get cloned by other newspapers.
Right.
Okay, so when it shows up in the Watertown paper, it also shows up in the Messina paper, right? And the Plattsburgh paper also shows up in the Adirondack paper, right? So we wind up getting, you know, kind of double coverage on these things. And, you know, and I get these tweets coming at me, you know, these indications, right, saying, you know, it's shown up again. And I look and I say, oh, didn't know that was happening. So that's nice.
It's tremendous in... at a time when budgets are tight, and that goes the same for the PR budget, that our talented staff has been able to reach out to these news outlets and get essentially, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of free publicity for the college and its programs. And it's been an off-campus effort, but especially a big push by PR. So.
Yep. Okay, and we were just talking about the co-curricular transcript and our badges. And a lot of cool on-campus activities, and our athletic team. So, Courtney, could you give us an update on these?
Sure.
As well as maybe on some new SUNY policies that'll be affecting us.
I would love to do that. Sure. So the leadership and cultural competency badge are both well underway at this point. I think when Zvi said cool programs, he's referring to the fact that he presents this evening at 7 p.m. on a talk about sexism and racism in comic books. So we're looking forward to Zvi's talk. Suzanne McDermott, who's our HR director, is also doing a leadership badge presentation on Thursday for students to help develop their leadership skills. And we've had lots of faculty and staff participating, giving workshops and talks. So that's been really fantastic. Often in the student life side, we're tasked with creating programs and hosting them ourselves, but it's been nice that it's been a whole campus effort. We also had a keynote speaker in September, David Flood, who's a national speaker, came to Canton High School a few years ago. His video on YouTube was like 4 million hits. We brought him in late September. He was a tremendous success for our keynote for the leadership badge. Young Women's Leadership Institute was this past weekend and was another opportunity for folks to earn leadership badge credit. We had 13 students from SUNY Canton attend. The Living Writers series that Travis mentioned and the leadership lecture series that the alumni office puts on are both opportunities for students to get credit. So it's been a really great campus-wide effort, which we really appreciate. On the athletic side, we have nearly 50 esports players now, and both our FIFA and Overwatch teams are undefeated, which is fantastic. Our FIFA team is captained by 3 men's soccer players, so it's this wonderful crossover of traditional athletics and esports, so kind of one of those juxtapositions that's cool. Men's soccer and volleyball both made the NAC championship playoffs. They both lost. Men lost 1-0 to Thomas College. The volleyball team lost 3-0 to Maine Maritime, but still wonderful opportunities to get us in post-game play, post-season play. Randy and 2 student athletes right now are in York, Maine for the NAC Student Athletic Advisory Council meeting, so it's been an opportunity for our students to get involved on a larger level with our conference, which is something that will look really nice on their resume.
And a handful of us, including Z, myself, Liz Brown, who is our faculty athletic rep, Randy, will be going to the NCAA convention at the end of January in Orlando. So I know it'll be really hard for us to be in sunny Orlando. Well, you all are in the snow, but we'll try to pull together for you. So the policy that Z was referring to, in October, the Board of Trustees passed a sexual harassment and consensual relationship policy, passed that along to the chancellor for her review, and essentially they're two separate things, but it's the intent is to create a uniform university system-wide policy on both. The sexual harassment policy sort of sounds like a no-brainer. They're asking us to meet or exceed the standards of 129B and Title IX and labor law 201G, I think, 201G. Which is what we've been doing all along. So they're basically reinforcing the standard that we should continue to do what we're doing and in many cases exceed that where we can, which we already do at Canton, which is nice. It requires annual training and ensuring compliance. We have to do an annual climate survey. SUNY is actually providing the vehicles for all of that at this point. We're reviewing their training module to see if it's something we want to switch to. At this point, we still operate under the campuses we comply modules, which has been successful for us. We did a major update this year. The climate survey, they just rolled out a draft of it maybe 2 weeks ago that they'll provide us the final copy of. Consensual relationships, sort of like we talked about last time, this prohibits romantic or sexual relationships between faculty, staff, and students where there's an existing supervisory, evaluative, instructional, or foreseeable future relationship of those terms. It also indicates that we should evaluate the need for a prohibition against sexual or romantic relationships between faculty or staff and undergraduate students. It gives the opportunity for disclosure of prior existing relationships and requiring alternate supervisory roles for those who are in those relationships. So this isn't really different than what we talked about before. Now it's an opportunity for us to talk about campus procedure. So this is the blanket policy. This is a minimum of expectations. Now we have to develop how we want to address it as a campus. And we went over that at a prior meeting, but essentially working with the Human Resources Department and Title IX, we've now combined together and allowing for folks to divulge these relationships. And we work with them to navigate those relationships on campus and we'll update our policies, but not fundamentally different than what we talked about before, I think. So I can't answer any questions.
And if I'm not mistaken, the sexual harassment piece of it is going to be a unitary SUNY policy. Mm-hmm. In other words, there'll be one policy, every SUNY institution will follow it. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we have no flexibility on that, but the good news is we're already doing it. Okay.
It's a minimum standard, so we minimally have to have this basic policy and we can go, we can exceed that as much as we can.
Okay, and at least at the moment, the consensual relations end of it gives this, what they're doing is setting essentially a floor again, which I think is the policy that they have at Stony Brook, mm-hmm. is what it's based on. And campuses have a bit more leeway there in terms of how they implement it. So, any questions for Courtney? And we'll keep you informed as these things develop. Okay, Lenore, community and government relations, what's new?
We are entering a very different era in terms of our government relations. Based on the elections, we now have no majority representation in any assembly, Congress, congressional, or Senate body, which puts us at a major disadvantage in terms of getting funding for things, which is very unfortunate. We were working with, Assemblywoman Jenny's office on a substantial influx to be able to work on some initiatives downtown. That very likely is going away. So the kind of the SAM grants, the state and municipal facilities grants that we would have eligibility for from both Assemblywoman Jenny's office and Senator Ritchie's office are now pretty much off the table. Because they're now both in the minority party in their respective bodies that are representatives. So that puts us in a major disadvantage when we're going into the budget cycle. The same is true, of course, at the federal level. Now Congresswoman Stefanik is in the minority party in the House, and both of our senators are in the minority party in the Senate. So it's going to be difficult, but we will continue to work with our representatives at, you know, the local and the state and the federal levels, help them to understand the college's priorities, what's good for our students, and we'll go from there. So it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, there was a front page article in the Watertown Daily Times on this subject either yesterday or the day before. Yeah, it was the headline article pointing out. I think there's a grand total in all of the North Country of one assembly person who's in the majority and in Plattsburgh, and everybody else is in the minority.
And just remember, Annie Gannon is responsible for $8.1 million being put into the North Country.
Yeah.
And I know that might even be more, but if I left the Economic Development Council, that's what we tally. And I'll tell you, I've got to be quiet because everybody knows how democratic I am. But robocalls were bad. I'll be quiet. But I've got a couple robocalls that have to do with personal life of that. Is this statement, what has happened here, and then they went on with things that weren't really accurate. Is this going to affect your vote? And that, don't tell me that that didn't turn the tide.
It was a nasty political season across the board, and it leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, I think, which again makes our advocacy even that much more difficult.
But we're still committed to working with our representatives, all parties, all levels, right? To, you know, and we've got a great story, and we've got a great story to tell.
Yeah.
Okay, that resonates with.
I'm sorry for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. But I mean, you know, we've got a great story to tell that resonates with both political parties. Everybody is in favor of economic development. Everybody is in favor of training students for careers in technology and implementation of Business 4.0. We're right there, okay, in doing that. And, you know, hopefully the divided government that we now have at the federal level will encourage people to reach across the aisle and work together. And that would be a good thing.
That said, in terms of our community relations, I think that we continue to build very strong relationships at the local and regional levels. As has been mentioned a couple times, I think the SBDC merger has been very, very positive for us with our elected representatives and for the various communities. It expands our reach across pretty much the entirety of Northern New York in terms of economic development and puts our name on the map even that much more. I think that's very positive. As Courtney mentioned, the Women's Leadership Initiative was great. It was a wonderful conference. It brings together women from the four colleges as well as professional women across the community for mentorship opportunities. And what we found, this conference, our fifth annual conference, I'm a co-chair of the board for the Women's Leadership Initiative. What we found this year is that the group really bonded very well across the campuses. There was a lot of interaction between the various campuses and the young women from various campuses. A lot of mutual respect that was shown, I think. I think the young women learned a lot from both the keynote speaker, who is a 31-year state trooper and is now a senior investigator with the New York State Police. I think it was a very positive experience all around, and we really like to expand those opportunities on campus. We appreciate the support from Courtney's office in that regard as well. I think people overall are very impressed with what SUNY Canton is doing, and that word is spreading across the region and really across the state. We're getting a lot of like, wow, you're doing really well kind of comments. And regardless of our political representation, I think that serves us very, very well, both in the short term and the long term.
Mm-hmm. And again, kind of tying the two points together, you know, one of the nice things that happened when I was out in Plattsburgh for the ribbon cutting is Senator Little, who I know from NCREDC things, came up to me and was talking about how impressed she was with what SUNY Canton is doing in a number of different directions. And, you know, even though she's going to be in the minority in the Senate, right, she and Senator Ritchie have got a lot of friends across the aisle as well. And so I still think that they'll be able to be hopefully somewhat effective in bringing home some resources to the North Country. And Senator Griffo as well.
I also wanted to acknowledge that I've been the subject of a couple of articles in the press regarding the elections, and I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has them.
Okay. Any questions for Lenore? Okay. And finally, Jim, last but not least, right? Maybe you can update the group about our recent labor management meeting and any other issues affecting our unions.
Well, as you heard, we have a new contract. That has helped morale drastically within the ranks. The people seem much happier. I've had a lot of comments that finally we have a contract, so that's a wonderful thing. Joel LaRue has stepped up now, is going to be our new vice president for professionals. And Billion, the hole I left when I moved up to be the president. So that now we now have a full
slate
of our people. Everybody's represented now, finally. So it takes a while to have that happen. I don't know if somebody understand what the new contract meant. There were a lot of new hires that may not never seen a raise since they got here in 2 or 3 years. So that, you know, it's hard to, people start thinking, you know, people want raises. And when they don't see them for a while, especially new people, they may tend to look elsewhere. So this is going to help a lot in maintaining our employees on the campus. We're involved, it's just starting to get involved in something called the People's Project. I don't know if you've heard of that before, Lenore knows about it more than I do, because we just had a phone call a few weeks ago from our compatriots down in Albany and a nice woman from Messina. Thank you. She is heading this up. It's what I see from it was the reunions of Messina when Alcoa left took a big hit. As we all know, Messina's in trouble, and so is St. Lawrence County for a lot of the same reasons. And this is a project the unions are going to try to pull together and see what we can do to help the economy in North Country. So hopefully I'll learn a lot more and we can become more involved. SUNY Potsdam, SUNY Canton leadership or union leadership are working on that right now. That's about all.
Yeah, we had a good labor management meeting.
That was very eventful. My first one that I've had to be the president of, and it was fun. It was nice. They treated me well. We worked on some issues, not too major, nothing that was critical at this point. Mm-hmm.
We have a very, I think, friendly working relationship, and that's to everybody's benefit. And so that concludes the reports from the various areas, and I'm happy to answer any more general questions on any other topic if anybody's interested in hearing something.
I'd just like to make a comment. You know, people as old as I am or others that are in the liberal arts tradition, well, first they heard about esports and everything, and they have skepticism. How does that fit in, you know, to the liberal arts education or to technology? And you gave wonderful examples that students could give to answer that. But also, I've heard things about, well, how's this going to work, you know, for them economically? Are you familiar with this magazine, The Week?
Yep.
It's like a compendium. I love it. Anyway, there's an article in this week's. Says, a live sports legend bets on esports. NBA Hall of Famer Michael Jordan is backing an esports startup, said Evan Novi Williams in Bloomberg.com. He joined other investors last week, putting $26 million into Axiomate Gaming, a company that pursues ventures in the esports business, which features professional video game players competing for prize money in front of often huge national audiences. Axiomatic, formed in 2015, owns a controlling share of Team Liquid, a manager of top players in games such as Street Fighter and Fortnite. Esports revenue this year is likely to hit more than $900 million, and competitions are beginning to be big enough to pack audiences into venues like Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and similarly to Michael Jordan, the person who owns the esport franchise for New York City, right, for Manhattan, is the same person who owns the New York Mets. Yeah. And so, you know, the people in traditional sports see esports as something they need to be on top of and involved in. And so, you know, what we're trying to do in general at the college is try to, you know, get there 5 years before the other SUNYs get there in terms of critical new programs, in terms of personalized pathways for our students, and in terms of other initiatives. And so, you know, we're constantly looking at the horizon as a college of technology and trying to tell SUNY, use us for this purpose. We're the people who, you know, have got the long vision, and we can pilot these things and see what works, see what doesn't work, and then the ones that work, we can take them to scale across the system. And, you know, SUNY, as I'm sure you all know, has always had a problem, right, with the colleges of technology trying to figure out what are we, okay? And this is the answer we're trying to put into their heads.
Any other questions? I just have a couple of things, but first of all, Marie covered one area that I wouldn't have to get into that one. About the election.
Oh.
I just want to say that the student Canton is doing a wonderful job. Like, I guess Lenore or somebody was saying that everywhere you go, it's all positive about student Canton. And that's really, really, truly remarkable, particularly with other campuses having difficulties. I remember reading a couple weeks ago, and I have no idea, I can't remember what it was about, that we were cooperating with St. Lawrence University, Clarkson, and pretty positive at Canton about something, I can't even remember. It's in the Watertown Times.
We work with them on a lot of things.
But I thought, my God, we've come a long way when St. Lawrence would have anything to do with SUNY Canton. I go back a long time ago, so I remember the feeling was not good about SUNY Canton for St. Lawrence University. Last Friday, I got an email from Karen Stolese, Michaelis forwarded to me. Apparently the president of the faculty senate at SUNY Purchase somehow got it in his mind that the college councils that were acting with holdover members, in other words, had not been replaced or reappointed, that somehow or another all of the actions of the college councils throughout the state were illegal. Therefore, probably any action that the college council had taken would be null and void. For example, the president wouldn't be president. Right?
Now they're going too far.
And, I thought to myself, the college council recommends the appointment of the president to SUNY Central. Anyone, if they just stop and think about that for a little bit, I don't think that SUNY Central would allow appointment of a new president throughout the state on many campuses if it were not legal. Right? But obviously that was not thought out. It reminds me a few years ago, in fact, Chloe Ann was the assembly person in the assembly then. And in the town of Canton, in the village, they wanted to combine the highway superintendents. And that, there were a lot of controversy about that. I lived in the country, or still do. I was not necessarily for it. I went to the meeting, and here you have the village board and the town board. And they have an attorney. And the attorney's opinion was that all they had to do, redraft the resolution and send it to Corianne, the assembly, pass it, and then do away with it and combine it. Now, anyone in your right mind, how do you do away with an elected position? Or do you want to throw in the district attorney, too? I mean, but this is legal advice. I mean, people don't think. So anyway, now I'm finally getting to what you want to hear, or may not want to hear. So anyway, I know you're all familiar with the duties of the College Council and the state education law. And in the state education law, that does not address the appointment of the College Council members. That's under the public officers law. And you may or may not be familiar with that. But let me read this to you, and I'll make sure that Karen is aware of it. Every officer except the judicial officer, a notary public, commissioner of deeds, and an officer whose term is fixed by the Constitution, having duly entered on the duties of his office, shall, unless the office shall terminate or be abolished, hold over and continue to discharge the duties of his office after the expiration of the term for which he has been chosen, until his successor shall be chosen and qualified. But after the expiration of such term, the office shall be deemed vacant for the purpose of choosing his successor. An officer so holding over for one or more entire terms shall, for the purpose of choosing his successor, be regarded as having been newly chosen for such terms. An appointment for a term shortened by reason of a predecessor holding over shall be for the residue of the term only. So it's very clear that we have not been acting illegally.
Or in other words, you're all stuck.
In other words, you can still be president. When Friday, when I first got notice of that, I called Tom immediately and asked him if he was willing to take over. And he said he would. So there's always backup. Oh, yeah, one other person always volunteered. This is nothing to me, but it's Bruce Dart. You know Bruce Dart?
Yes, yeah, I do.
Every time I run into Bruce, he said, "You need a president up there yet?" We always want to be president.
Should I watch my back?
And then under the education law, the terms are appointed for 7 years. And they're not even terms. In other words, my term may run out in 2018. It doesn't necessarily mean if I was replaced, that person would be replaced with my term. They could replace me with Tom's term, whoever his term would end. So it's kind of confusing in that part. And five members constitutes a quorum. But I think you're all pretty much familiar with that. We do the end report, which normally we accept the president's report. Be aware that the College Council at any time, can refer any matter it believes to SUNY. But are there any questions about that? And the other confusion, I think, is because the College Council, we don't take enough time to, the campus is not aware of what the College Council does. I don't know how many people think I get paid. You get a salary.
You mean you don't?
No. We've tried. We've lobbied you. But
no.
Maybe we'll have to talk to Jim. Maybe he can throw that in.
That's not a card.
So I guess that's our own doing.
You need to join our union, like you said. Yeah.
Maybe we could unionize. But are there any questions about that? Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Do we have any idea why this was brought up at all?
It was an email that Karen received
from
the president Purchase.
Right.
And his question was not a single campus bringing it up to SUNY, but should a group of them, if this is a concern across the campuses, where I think it's more of a concern in some places where they don't even need the quorum, not that they're not in term.
Right.
You know, I mean, ours is quorum, but they're not in term.
Throughout the state, all of the college councils are...
Yeah,
they're way behind reappointments.
Right.
They may be changing, I hope, after the election. But with our own college council, I'm aware that Joel Rich has received his material for reappointment, and two new members that are being recommended for appointment to our council have received their packages for.
Oh, good.
So there may be some movement.
Okay.
New members as replacement for.
I don't. That I don't know.
Long time, 7+ year full term, unappointed.
You're not off the hook yet.
Just ask it.
Tom, you're stuck with us forever.
Valiant effort, Tom.
You know, Tom thinks he has the longest tenure as not being reappointed, but I hate to tell you this, but you're all aware that it's political. It's recommended by the government.
It is?
Or the government. All right, so I'm not being political here. But anyway, a number of years ago, when Nelson Rockefeller was governor for a long time, and then Malcolm Wilson came after him, Larry White from Messina, the mayor of Messina, was on the college council, and Larry was not reappointed for years, Tom, and years, and years, when he was a member. And I think at that time, he may have turned out to be one of the longest serving college council members in the state. But, so you don't feel alone.
And I was just going to say, and I know I speak for everybody from the college side in thanking our members of the college council for the time and the attention that you devote to our well-being. And so we very much appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Although, a check would be better.
I informed the chancellor. She says it's in the mail.
All right, so since the meeting was just informational today, I'll thank you all for coming, and hopefully you'll have a warm day. Thank you.